The Midweek Drive Team, four words which signify quality and all that's best in audio entertainment.
A wonderful song for self-isolation, Frank Sinatra and A Man Alone, bringing us neatly round to our film critic extraordinaire, who I think is alone at present. Never mind, we're never alone when we're with the Midweek Drive team. Richard Fitzwilliams, how are you, Richard?
I'm extremely well, and looking forward, I hope, to the end of lockdown. I'm perturbed to see Cineworld raise up pandemic rescue deals. There's a real problem there. I'm hoping that cinemas are going to be reopening on the 3rd.
Yes, well, I think there are more important things than life, to be absolutely honest, than the cinematic arts, but there we are. That's the front line.
Well, there's the theatre as well, because certain theatrical performances are planned, so yes, indeed, they are part and parcel of...
We don't need culture, Richard. We just need to actually ensure that we have a head down, nose to the grindstone, and follow the example set by Gillian Anderson in a portrayal of Margaret Thatcher in The Crown. Constant work. None of this arty-farty games played by the hoity-toity with one dibble, two dibble, three dibble, I dibble, etc. Step away from all that. It's just
I just ought to tell listeners your reference to the so-called dibbles. This is a reference to a game supposedly played by members of the royal family at Balmoral.
It's a test. It's a test,
Visits together with Dennis. I would also point out that...
You turn up dressed for drinks before dinner in your dinner suit. It's going to be an embarrassment right from the start, really. It's just...
Well, what was an embarrassment right from the start was the fact that the crown has changed so dramatically, and I think that this is a point I have to make. It really is very, very sad. I was a great admirer of the first series, the way Peter Morgan handled...
Richard, may I quote from Janet Street Porter, something I never said I'd actually say I even considered doing with JSP, but I quote from Janet Street Porter's column this very day, actually. The monarchy wants to chat with us about mental health and a host of good causes, but they also want to bring down the shutters when it suits them. Diana's silly interview made that impossible, and ever since the royals have failed to understand how their special mystery was wiped out. Most people probably believe events depicted in The Crown really happened, and who can blame them? The royal family's antics, divorces, dalliances with dodgy financiers with a penchant for very young girls, the sibling rivalry and the battles between the wives is exactly like Hemmerdale or Hollyoaks, only with better hats. The lovely picture they released this week of our 94-year-old Queen and her 99-year-old husband celebrating their 73rd wedding anniversary is a carefully staged piece of PR, designed to showcase everything that's wonderful and unique about our malfunctioning monarchy. It may be too late. Diana dealt the firm a fatal blow back in 1995.
It's, of course, easy to write that sort of material. I mean, the point is...
It's all over, Richard. By the time we get to 2030, look for other correspondence areas.
If you look back over recent decades, of course, the 1990s and the Crown is deliberately going up to the early 2000s so that we can cover the 1990s. Was that absolutely disastrous decade for the royal family? And look at the way the Golden Jubilee, the Diamond Jubilee, here's the Platinum Jubilee in 2022, because we know that's going to be celebrated with a four-day bank holiday weekend. But the point I wanted to make with reference to the Crown, initially it was dramatic, it had fabulous production values, it had a superb cast. Can you beat Claire Foy as the...
Yes, Olivia Colman.
No, but she is cold, she's aloof, she's snobbish, and she's chirpy rather than dignified. I mean, she's a superb actress in Tyrannosaur and indeed in The Favourite, absolutely, but those are different. The point problem with this, and please let me just dwell on both Olivia Colman and Gillian Anderson, because there are two...
Richard, we can dwell on Gillian Anderson as long as we wish.
There are two parts of the fourth season of The Crown, disastrous marriage between Charles and Diana. It was indeed a nightmare. McCorrin, very good as Diana, and Josh O'Connor, the way he creeps around as the most wimpish Charles has ever been created is not convincing. But also you have Olivia Colman's Queen lined up against Margaret Thatcher, played by Gillian Anderson. Now, Anderson's not an actress. I have to say that I personally have liked a great deal. I saw in All About Eve, and also in The Streetcar Named Desire. But I will admit that for the latter, she got very good reviews. But on the other hand, here you've got a problem. If you're playing a character, you want to inhabit that character and you want to give them presence. The hairstyle's exact. The voice, the agonies that has gone into the practice of that, it's perfectly obvious that hours have been...
Meryl Streep, right. Take that, is what I say.
I'm coming to that. The problem is that Thatcher doesn't have the required physicality. When you see her pottering around bent in the kitchen, what you see is somebody who basically had it before they got the push. The whole point, or one of the whole points of Margaret Thatcher, was that she did have the physicality, even if she didn't have the...
You don't go stalking in those shoes, Richard. Stalking in those shoes.
Not what the Crown is able to convey, which Meryl Streep did in The Iron Lady regarding the stalking thing, and just concentrating on the episode that you're referring to called the Balmoral Test, just to cue listeners in again, because if you haven't seen it, or even...
It shouldn't have dropped all at once, Richard, is all I have to say. It should be released sparingly, 1 week at a time, not a big digital dose, whumps there upon yourself.
But the Balmoral Test, firstly, that's passed triumphantly by Diana, who subsequently doesn't like country things, and the royals can't understand it. But
you don't shoot the stag like that?
Well, the symbolism of the stag, we saw that in the Queen, the film. A stag is hung upside down, and we know what that is supposed to be a metaphor for.
Precisely.
Didn't think it very tasteful. But the point I'm trying to make is that the scene you refer to, which is utterly ridiculous, it's perfectly true Thatcher didn't bring shoes for the country, but that she'd go in bright blue stalking, bright blue linked to the Tory party just in case anyone...
And wearing perfume as well.
And looking absolutely ridiculous.
And splashing in water so that the stag could actually hear her.
And splashing in water and then being sent back by the Queen, who would have initially sent her or asked her to change earlier, wouldn't have dragged her out and then sent her back. And then she goes, and what happens is one of the worst scripted scenes in the film, Helena Bonham.
She's sitting in Queen Victoria's chair.
May I just paint the scene? Helena Bonham Carter's Princess Margaret sees Thatcher, who doesn't return to the stalking, working. And what's worse in Balmoral, if you sit in Queen Victoria's chair, you're in disgrace. So when she sits in the chair, she's upbraided by a rude Princess Margaret. And when she says, I do beg your pardon. Oh, she's told you can't say that. You've got to say...
No, no, what? What?
No, but
what?
All this, firstly, this ill-mannered nonsense, the silliness, the snobbery, the nastiness, and all the rest of it. It's a lot of it is invented.
But the Americans and Netflix love it.
At the very beginning, on the funeral, the assassination and funeral of Lord Mountbatten, and how during the Tripping of the Colour, which is the first scene in the first episode of the fourth season, intercut with the scenes from the Troubles in Ireland, just as Mountbatten's funeral is also intercut with them. The facts are that this had a political agenda, it had an agenda against the monarchy, and Morgan has said monarchy is like a mutating virus.
Yes, and I can see at the present, I could hear the cheers, I could literally, a continent away, actually hear the cheers of Meghan and Harry saying, yes, you see, that's exactly what we had to put up with. That's it, you know, it's writ large. What a wonderful trailer for our next Netflix series.
I think that what you've got with Netflix is firstly 73 million out of 158 million subscribers have seen The Crown, and that is, of course, huge. And there's no doubt that there's a vast audience out there that believes that this is what actually happened. In many parts of it, of course it was. In many parts of it, it wasn't. Now, what I think, since you've got warnings about Diana's bulimia scenes.
Yes.
You've got the screens taken up for a moment or two by a warning about that. What you should have is a warning that this is a fictional
No, Richard, it's real life, surely. It's almost a docudrama.
No, this is precisely what the Mail on Sunday is running something to do with this and an article on this on literally tomorrow, and I hope I should be quoted contributing because I think it's very important. I don't think that it is your normal docudrama. Remember that it's got 20 more episodes to go, and this trouble started in the second series in the episode regarding the Duke of Edinburgh's sister who died in a plane crash, and that was in a season that I thought on the whole was rather good. That was a desperately, brutally cruel, twisted and distorted episode.
In the words of Janet Street Porter, The Crown has been top quality soap, a brilliantly crafted and beautifully dressed version of the royal family, one that provides us with plenty of imagined gossip, infighting and family feuding. Just the tonic for dreary winter nights.
Well, I'm glad you and Janet Street Porter are cozying up, Alex.
I think at the end of the day, Richard, it's clearly a case of, as Brexit has proven, as indeed a number of other factors have proven, including the pandemic, which means that making plans for 2022 seems a little bit premature to me, but I'll just say that now. It proves that effectively once you dress things up with a semblance of truth, you can tell anything. And if you actually wanted to have a piece of propaganda which is going to basically effectively put people against the monarchy, then I think The Crown is it. That's all I will say.
In fact, I would say.
How can vegan? How can vegans love the Crown when they see that kind of hunting and shooting and fishing? My gripe, actually, Richard, much more sincere, as somebody who's attended badminton and indeed Burley and indeed various other equine events, etc. One thing that you don't actually get when somebody's actually doing the show jumping at the home is you don't get the show jumper able to actually hear the commentary. The commentary is actually silent. That's the whole point of actually doing a show jumping thing. You have the sound of the actual thing. If you're listening, if you're watching on television, you'll hear the commentary, but that's because the commentators are in a separate box. They should not actually have the commentaries going out, unless, of course, times changed back in the 1970s, and I don't think they did, but there we are.
Well, I mean, those particular points, rather like the uniform the Queen wears. The insiders can make...
Don't get me started on that.
I mean, it really is something that, with that vast budget, the Crown overall has...
But you know, anything with Gillian Anderson in is good news from my point of view, ever since
I,
the
I
X-Files.
I would say this, and that is that if you portray a family, frankly, if you choose the royals or the mafia, the mafia, they're not very nice, but you know where you were, and they might be better mannered, even if they went about their business pretty ruthlessly. Here you've got members of a family. Remember, you've got the Queen Mother, Princess Anne.
Didn't see much of Andrew.
Prince Charles. Oh, there was a pathetic scene. It really wasn't impressive. Like, they're both portrayed as utter wimps, though Andrew wasn't when he was at the Falklands. The fact, however, are that if you look at the duplicitous nature of the family portrayed, and they're so snobbish, they're so snooty.
Yes.
They are...
As I said, Richard, if anybody actually was taking that as a visual example of why Britain should become a republic, tomorrow they'll use the Crown. End of.
Except that it isn't the end of, because what tends to happen, and I mean, this is...
It's time Nigel Farage took over his mantle.
No, what tends to happen is that people seem to sit in front of it and absorb something that's very spectacular from the costumes, sets, and all of that. And certain scenes, as there were two episodes I thought that were good, which involved the political aspect of Peter Morgan's writing, the visit to the Antipodes, which had the possibility of going to a bigger republic under Bob Hawke, which is overplayed, but...
And Richard,
also the Commonwealth Conference and the sanctions against South Africa episode, which in fact Michael Shea is supposed to have leaked views that the Queen had about Thatcher's social policies, which oddly enough, because the Queen is not painted in a particularly favourable light, as you know, but then on the other hand, the device of Fagin becoming an anti-Thatcher figure and the Queen touching his hand.
Steady. Step away from that.
All of this, the agendas behind all of this, the fact that Morgan thinks he can do what he likes. Well, there's been a very, very strong backlash against a lot of it.
Well, you know, I mean, the Morgans are known for this. Piers Morgan, he likes to say what he likes, what he says. So, you know, why shouldn't the other Morgan actually do it? Richard, do you know why the Antipodes were actually called the Antipodes?
No.
Well, I'm shocked, Richard. As a royal correspondent, I thought you would have had that to hand, especially somebody who I've doubtless seen the Mappa Mundi in Hereford Cathedral, which actually demonstrates in medieval times the antipodes and so on. It's because, clearly, if you're on the other side of the world, you will walk backwards. So it's antipodum, walking backwards, the walking backwards people, hence Antipodes.
Master and Commander, the far side of the world.
Yeah, no, James Cook, I think you'll actually find. Master and Commander, fiction, complete ridiculousness. James Cook, genuine person.
Good. We need a sequel. we've actually got a film, which I hope we have time to discuss.
Well, storyline. When British aid worker Hannah returns to the ancient city of Luxor, she comes across Sultan, a talented archaeologist and former lover. As she wanders, haunted by the familiar place, she struggles to reconcile the choices of the past with the uncertainty of the present.
Exactly, and it's an atmospheric film and set in the Egyptian city of Luxor, so you've got the site of these vast monuments, once the capital of the pharaohs.
And one of the locations, of course, of that epic Roger Moore James Bond movie, The Spy Who Loved Me.
That might very well have been epic for some. All the Roger Moore...
It had Jaws in it, for goodness sake. What's not to love?
Sadly, a lot not to love.
And Mrs. Ringo Starr, Barbara Bach.
Character was absolutely ridiculous. Oh. I want to dwell on something that I thought was sensitively done, because Hannah played by Andrea Riseborough, who played Margaret Thatcher, incidentally, particularly well.
Not as well as Gillian Anderson, but slightly better than Meryl Streep.
I thought Meryl Streep was extremely good, but just staying, I think, with Luxor so that listeners can get some consistency. She's a doctor who has been shattered by her wartime experiences in the Middle East. She's in the city for a week's break. She's supposed to be heading to war-torn Yemen, and she meets up with her former lover, the archaeologist Sultan, played by Karim Saleh, who's currently involved in excavation. And as we see archaeology being a sort of resurrection of the past, but how do you excavate feelings buried in time, especially when you're suffering from PTSD? I mean, Hannah and Sultan were lovers 20 years previously when they were in their 20s, when they reminisce. And this is a film, it's a relatively sparse script. Its strength is its pace and its understatement. And as Hannah grasps at some sanity in her surroundings, she gets a form of spiritual uplift. This is where the film is so good, which is synonymous with these extraordinary monuments, the power and the presence, the majesty they have. And it does invite a sort of human response. They take time to reconnect, and the tension builds up as a time of departure approaches. Very good performance by Angela Rice, but the only time I must say I liked her, because I saw also in a series called The Devil's Horse set during the English Civil War, which was not good either. I didn't like her as Margaret Thatcher. I think that Karim Saleh was very good as Sultan, with the sensitivity the role requires, and visually, it's a strong film. It gives a sense of place. It takes its time. You've got shots of the Nile's banks, which look like ancient mosaics come alive. You know, it's changed so little there down the centuries. I didn't think it necessary to divide the film into sections, but director Zeina Dura succeeds in capturing the timelessness of the settings very well, I think. Contrast them perhaps with the turmoil in our world today, putting it mildly. I mean, there's a quote that I think is a good one to mention. As Hannah says, the old world is dying and the new world struggles to be born. Now is the time of monsters.
Samarin Hans, reviewer for The Observer, points out, with only 3 stars that she actually gives the movie, Riseborough plays a medic traumatised by her Syrian war work in this meandering tale. For much of the film, the heaviness of Hannah's spirit is felt rather than explained, reliant on Riseborough's nuanced facial expressions and physicality rather than dialogue.
Well, yes, which is roughly the point I made, and it appealed to me more than it appealed to
Simran, exactly.
Available on Curzon Home Cinema, and if you want a movie that is it's slow, it's paced, but deliberately so.
Deeply saddened, of course, by the bad hair day that Rudy Giuliani actually experienced this week, but if you will actually use hair dye, I suppose that will happen when you're under the lights and the spotlight. Maybe it's a case of the spirit of Martin Bashir is actually sort of being echoed in terms of that, and we'll see what actually happens with respect to that. As indeed, Rosa Monckton has actually said, as a former friend of Diana, Princess of Wales, she accuses the BBC of making money out of a criminal offence.
I think that appears from what we're hearing and what has been reported and what Earl Spencer has said regarding the 32 points he kept a note.
Exactly. And it paved the way a quarter of a century later for the Crown. So there we are.
Well, it's going to mean BBC glory over an interview, which... and it's very interesting to consider this.
Two in many ways. You got Diana and you got Andrew. I mean, you sort of thought Andrew might have learnt, but what the hey.
But would Diana have given it anyway? If so, to whom? I do feel that she wanted to get a case out, but why did she use a comparatively unknown journalist? And we now know, of course, that her brother put Bashir in touch with her, and then when he realised that he was a liar, it was too late. She was hooked because she was already desperately concerned that she was being stalked and spied on and so forth. And after the historic interview, I mean...
Well, we can see what's happening in The Crown, clearly. I mean, that's the whole essence. I mean, if you want the real unadulterated truth, that's the go-to place, obviously.
Well, quite frankly, I'm afraid to tell you that we will see what is or what happened, or part of what happened, or an aspect of what happened in the Crown in due course.
Precisely. Unless, of course, you consumed it all at once. Woof. Richard, it has been fantastic as ever. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
I have indeed.
Will you be back with us again in about a week's time?
I look forward.
Then, in honour, obviously, of the Crown, and, of course, the awesome portrayal of the late Diana, Princess of Wales, when she's particularly sort of...
I am a Corrin, incidentally, which I thought was very good, because she plays an ingenue who is rather knowing. She's anxious to catch Charles's eye, about that. But then, of course...
It all goes wrong.
It goes disastrously wrong, because, according to the Crown, he never gives up...
No, of course not. No, I mean, despite the last letter that was sent by Louis Mountbatten, who has already sort of upset Prince Philip as well by all manner of things and that sort of basis.
And well, we've, at the beginning of the episode one, scene one, we have Mountbatten having a fierce argument with Charles, who calls him a quisling. And says also, the fact that the Mountbatten's had an open marriage, there's a reference to that.
Yes.
Mountbatten writes, you should find a sweet-natured innocent.
We're back in 1936 again. You know, another Princess of Wales, another divorced woman. And let's say a divorced woman. Have we got another one today? Oh, yes, we have. Meghan. Oh, well, there we are. It's all good. Enough stuff. History has this habit of repeating itself sometimes, Richard, which is why we love it. This is by a Diana, but a different Diana, and it maybe sums up the state of the world today, upside down. Cheers for now, Richard Fitzwilliams.
Cheers.
I wonder what'll be happening in the Pierce household with respect to The Crown. Will they be actually watching it, absorbing it, and actually taking it as a classic case of docudrama? Will they actually see it and take it with a substantial pinch of salt? I don't know. Don't watch it if you're a vegetarian, however. Anyway, The Crown is there, available, if you are a person who has the Netflix streaming service. Richard, as you could tell, not a big fan. But what the hey? It's all upside down, isn't it, Robin Pierce?
It is indeed. Upside down, it's back to front, it's every which way for a year.
Yeah,
for The Crown. Not my personal taste, I've never seen an episode of it. But I do believe that Mrs. Pierce may be a fan. I strongly suspect.
Again, it'd be interesting to see, get Maria's view on the whole system. It'd be quite fascinating to see that. I think Gillian Anderson makes a wonderful Mrs. Thatcher. That's all I'll say. She's a very good actress.
What?
Yes, Gillian Anderson, Dana Scully is Mrs. Thatcher. Yes, exactly. That's going to get you tuning in.
Extraordinary piece of casting. that has actually piqued my curiosity.
Yeah, well, you see, go for season four. Look at it now. You will see her in full force doing it.
My old stamping ground of Carnarvon Castle was used for an investiture scene in, I think, season three. I'm not quite sure, but anyway.
Well, season four, Gillian Anderson, full star billing. It's like Game of Thrones, but even more exciting.
Oh, my goodness. Game of Thrones with Margaret and Dennis.
Yeah. And exactly. And Charles dances Louis Mountbatten, but there we are. And that's an explosive ending. I won't say any more because it would be considered possible bad taste, so I'll step away from that straight away.
I'm not going to say a word.
Quite right as well. Because the listener is keen to find out what you've been considering over the last few days from the growing back catalogue. Do you know, we're actually rapidly approaching our 4,500th podcast. You know, I think, well over 4,000, like 4,200 or so that we've actually had so far. And we are only, I think, about 90 downloads away from our 200,000th download.
Wow.
Yeah. So I just put that out there.
That is amazing.
There you go. Anyway, Robin, where would you like to take our little listener if they want to be guided in terms of, should I actually listen to this back edition of the podcast or not, as the case may be?
Well, as you're throwing stats out there, for my 85th appearance on the Midweek Drive.
Hey, very good.
I didn't go too far back. I went as far back as 19th of November. Because I looked on Podbean, Southside Broadcasting, and I always look to see where's the grist for the mill here? And I homed in on the 19th of November. And I clicked go, and I instantly heard a song called Christmas Bubble.
Yeah, I know. It's frightening, isn't it? Mind you, in Rarus, I think it's a stronger category credits than the dancing disco dustmen who are being promoted by the BBC as they dance around their dustbins in Birmingham.
Oh, good grief.
Technically, a Christmas dustbin boogie is what they're hoping will take them to number one.
As long as it's nothing by Simon Cowell. Now, Christmas Bubble. Now, as you know, and you did mention on the programme, I have sometimes colourful views on some of the Christmas hits. I have absolutely no time whatsoever for Band-Aid, for example.
It's Christmas time.
We really have no time. And
there won't be
Mariah
snow
Mary.
In Africa, Gris Christmas.
Well, I would like to tell Cliff Richard exactly
mistletoe
where,
and
wine. But there have been others that have been quite good. Now then, Christmas Bubble. I can tell that you're waiting with bated breath.
The bubble's going to burst.
As soon as it kicked in, I actually liked that song. In fact, against all the odds of how I go with these Christmas songs, and I'm a big fan of Christmas, I'm not a Grinch, I loved that song. It reminded me of the Christmas hits of the 70s so much because it had that classic pop beat. Mm. It didn't have some young diva going all nasal and throaty and holding a single note for about 30 seconds.
Hallelujah.
It brought me right... Well, actually, I like the Leonard Cohen version of that. Anyway, like Merry Christmas, Everybody from Slade, you know, that was written as a response, according to Noddy Holder, to the three-day week and the power cuts and the miners being on strike and everybody else being on strike and all the other crises of you know, the early 70s. And I think the same, more or less, goes for Roy Wood's I Wish It Could Be Christmas Every Day. And this Christmas bubble kind of reminded me of the spirit of those two Christmas songs. A really cheery, upbeat, what the hey, let's make the most of it kind of
spirit. We're in a Christmas bubble.
Born of those times.
We're in a Christmas bubble.
I loved in hearing Chris Clark's account of the... Have they recorded it?
Yeah, nightmare.
Four kids at a time.
Exactly.
You know, dubbing, overdubbing, stuff like that. And you know what? This would make an absolutely ideal, great Christmas number one.
Mm. It's like Grandma and Granddad writ
it's
large.
Nothing like that at all. No, sir.
Okay, then.
Nothing
the
like that.
The St. Winifred School Choir?
Stop. Oh, you'd better stop it right now.
Okay.
No, to me, it's Merry Christmas, Everybody, and I Wish It Could Be Christmas Every Day, Roy Wood, Noddy Holder. It's in that bracket, and it's certainly something that I reckon will be a perennial Christmas favourite, especially in the Pierce household, whether they like it or not.
Mm-hmm.
I control the...
Who would have thought that the Sleaford official 2020 Christmas song would actually be making it across boundaries internationally to Wales?
Indeed, and have perhaps your most curmudgeonly reviewer on Resonance Rewind find light and warmth. I mean, I'm sure that my heart grew to twice its size. Well, I hope it doesn't, because that would kill me. Anyway, I love that, and I would like to respectfully request, can we hear it again over the run-up to the Christmas period on Siren FM, please?
Oh, I think so.
I don't ask much of you.
No, I mean, it might even squeeze into the back of this piece after we've actually had a bit of Bob Seger and his Silver Bullet Band.
Awesomeness. From there, we went on to Joe Barnett and Flatmates from Hell. People who don't pay their way. You know, I've never been in that position. I've never had to deal with a flatmate, let alone an unreliable one. But I can't imagine anything that's less fair or a worse situation to find yourself in.
Single white female.
Well, oh, God, that would be worse.
Bridget Fonda.
That would be worse. It was just an incredible situation. One of the pieces of advice that the bank, now was it the NatWest or Barclays or one of the big banks, say that, you know, oh, you need to draw up a rota and you need to do this agreement. Mm. But that means that one of the people has to be the strong one.
Yes.
And in my view,
keep the Christmas bustle together.
Refusing to pay their own way. And the weaker one who's making up the shortfall. So I don't know how that would work.
Keeping the Christmas bubble together.
Yes. Money and Retirement. Well, that hit home. Neil Moles. And now I'm one of the lucky ones that I had to contribute to my pension pot from the age of 17 when I was joining the civil service. Okay. During my late teens and 20s, I very much resented having involuntary cuts made to my take-home pay because I was arrogant enough to think, I want my money now while I'm young, enough to enjoy it. Not when I'm half dead, but of course...
No, that's for Stephen and Tiffany, that you have to enjoy it when you're half dead. I mean, bottom line, Sikhs.
Absolutely.
And Bo, don't forget Bo.
Indeed, who is right here with me. But of course, now I'm glad that that was taken out of my hands and the deduction was made. It allowed me to enjoy what I want to do earlier than I would have done had I waited for my state pension. Mm-hmm. So I would echo, yes, start saving for your dotage as soon, as early as you can. It may allow you to leave the workplace and pursue your own dreams earlier. Go for it. I'm doing it. I'm living my best life. From then, we went on to Robert Metcalf and Fisherman's Friend. You know, I haven't had one of those for years, and I need to get some in.
Yeah, I thought I'd get through the interview without using the double entendre, but I couldn't.
You couldn't, could you? You fell early, because yeah. I thought, is he going to do this?
Of course, yeah. It's there, the goal is open, you have to put it in the net.
Indeed. It was almost a contractual obligation.
The Fisherman's Friend, that is.
Yes. Personally, I like this time of year. I mean, people go all miserable about Christmas. I tend to get a little lower around January, you know, which is this survey thing that the Fisherman's Friend people have done. And I think it's because after the high of Christmas, it's kind of deflating. All the lights are down. You've got nothing to look forward to. It's grim. It's miserable. I feel we're in for another winter of discontent this year, which kind of, again, highlights my...
Public
comment.
Sector, nothing for you. Nothing for you at all. Oh. Nothing.
Well, here's the odd thing, okay? I retired from the civil service. Active civil servants will not get a pay rise, probably.
No.
My pension gets topped up every year.
Yeah, so well, it's all about the timing, isn't it?
Pay rise after the civil service is to leave it.
It's all about the timing.
It is. Yeah. We're in for another winter of discontent, obviously, because everything is kind of
cancelled.
I mean, I think we're looking towards a depression more than anything else, rather than a recession. And it again highlights my comment about the value and validity of a song like Christmas Bubble. Mm. What surprised me was they have a mint flavour of Fisherman's Friend.
No, it's almost wrong, isn't it? Almost wrong.
I mean, that must be like an extra strong on steroids.
Mm. Mm.
I'm tempted to check that out.
Give it a go.
I am tempted to. I think I might next time I pop into town. Now then, we were talking then to the pirate ladies. Now, I had heard of Aunt Bonnie,
yes.
But I'd never heard of Mary Read.
I love her.
And it was mentioned that pirates are usually men, but...
Red Sonja?
Hang on a second.
Red Sonja?
A much-loved song by Nina Simone would beg to differ, and it was featured heavily on the soundtrack of Watchmen, the movie.
Mm.
And speaking of movies, I reckon we need a Hellcats movie. And I'll take it even further... Someone needs to sign up Margot Robbie for this, and it could be bigger than Pirates of the Caribbean.
Wow.
I do love
well,
a pirate movie.
With less wife-beating, that's for sure. Sorry.
Well, yes. Yeah. Well.
I'm sorry, Johnny. I know you've lost your role in the Harry Potter universe of Fantastic Beasts, and I know people are protesting and saying, don't go and see Amber Heard in Aquaman 2, you know, protest against it, but really, just let it go.
I never, ever let... whatever they do personally, get it into... It's all about the work for me.
Unless it was Jimmy Savile, in which case you just step away from that completely, really.
Well, Jim never fixed it for me.
No, exactly. Thank the Lord.
So I would like to see a female-orientated pirate movie. I mean, I'm a big fan of things like Black Sails, Pirates of the Caribbean, stuff like that. But one of the things that amazed me was that there are statues being built for Anne Bonny and Mary Read, right?
Unveiled, effectively. Unveiled.
Unveiled, sorry. Mm. My
They've already
my
been there. Built and sculpted.
Yep. Sculpted, not built, right. Isn't it amazing, and this is just a comment I'm throwing out there, that when they pull down statues that have been up for decades of people who are suddenly thought of as
bad people. Bad people.
Bad people who have been, you know, lauded over the ages.
Yeah. Whitewashed.
We are putting up a statue of a pirate who, by definition, was
a nasty person.
Breaking,
exactly.
Robbing, murdering.
But it's great because they're female.
I mean,
they're kicking ass. That's great.
Is it just me?
It was the unanswered question, but I just thought, I can't be. Just let it go. Just live with it.
I was just thinking, hang on a second, but these people are like criminals. I mean, you know, what's next? Is there going to be a statue for the Yorkshire Ripper?
Well, only if they're woke criminals, I suppose. You know, I mean, just a thought. Could be dramatic thoughts. Could open up a whole range of things, and I won't have a have your say column on this because the vitriol would be ridiculous.
I shouldn't. Saw away at the branch that we're both sitting on.
It is problematic in the same way as when you're talking about sawing branches, we find in the updated version of Lost in Space, Will Robinson encounters a robot and makes friends of it, quite literally through sawing through a branch.
I vaguely remember that episode. I will be watching it again as we build up to next week's
Indeed.
Lost in Space, of course.
The 21st Resonance Rewind.
Yes. Oh, our baby comes of age. Give it the key to the door. Right. You want to know who the contributor of the week is, don't you?
Well, always useful, I think.
Well, first of all, I would like to give an honorary mention to your good self, Alex Levchuk, for an amazing presentation on being human regarding Cook versus Kirk, the Battle of the Captains. Would we like to go on the Endeavour with Captain Cook and discover, you know, Australia and get killed on Hawaii? Or would we like to go boldly where no man has gone before on board the USS Enterprise with Captain Kirk?
But no holodeck, as somebody actually said.
No holodeck. Quite correct. Yeah. And I thought that it was really well presented, really entertaining, interesting, and thought-provoking. You ticked every box on that one.
Wow.
And honorary mention. Sadly, I can't give you contributor
of the week. No, of course not, because it wasn't broadcast.
Exactly.
You know, so there you go. And nor was it connected with the former BBC television series Being Human. It was a festival called Being Human, which was celebrated by universities across the land.
Indeed.
For the humanities.
So I just thought I'd throw that one out there.
Thank you.
Now, is it going to be available anywhere for people to listen to?
I mean, if they would like it, and they contact me directly, I do actually have a full recording of the event. So even if you would like to actually avail yourself of rewatching the whole thing, I can actually send it to you. Well, then that'll be fine.
Yes, please.
I've sent it to our North Carolina correspondent, so that's the precedent has been set.
Now then,
bless her heart, she forgot the day. I mean, she had her ticket and she forgot the day. It's being in America.
I had my ticket and I was waiting patiently.
The week earlier. Exactly. Never mind.
It's the international date.
Yeah.
Contributor of the week, hands down, it's Chris Clark.
Well, there we are, and he's getting an awful lot of media coverage as well. I've even heard a rumour that another radio station, yes, another one available, I think BBC Radio 2 are considering actually running a feature on it, which would be nice. So there we are. So,
but you did it first. You're a pioneer.
We've been saying that for years, basically, as opposed to just an ear. But there we are. Excellent. Robin, it's been fantastic as ever. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
It was a delight as usual.
We will be back again in the very, very near future. Of course, Robin makes appearances as far as Resonance Rewind is concerned, obviously the Midweek Drive, and indeed in the latest edition of Sound and Nick's Vision, which I think is going to be, well, it's already out there if you want to download it, but you can also actually listen to it if you're a traditionalist on radio, on Siren Radio, on Thursday evening, just after the news at 7 o'clock. So there we are. Okay, Bubble will be coming up, Christmas Bubble that is, but first, as promised, here's Bob.
You always want every time you place the bell. You're still damn good, no one's gotten to you yet. Every time they were sure that you caught, you were quicker than they thought. You just turn your back and walk. You always said cards will never do you wrong. The trick you said was never play the game too.
Some wind to my